Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and I'm here with comedian Lewis Black, who's going to be coming to D.C. to the Warner Theater on Saturday, February 28th. Lewis, thanks for joining us on WTOP.
My pleasure.
Now, before we get into your show, you're a local guy, right? Aren't you from Silver Spring?
I'm from the old Silver Spring, not the new, modern, unbelievably, boy, there's a lot to do here, Silver Spring.
How has it changed for you? I mean, I assume you've been back to the new and can compare the new to the old.
Well, there was a company called Hex there. There was one store. There was a, you know, it was a tiny, it was like a village in comparison to what has become a major city. You know, I mean, it's like, it's, you know, there's the difference. It went from nothing to huge, you know, the metro had made a big change in terms of that.
Sure, absolutely. You know? Do you still come back often or just when your show comes?
As far as Silver Spring goes, I'm there. Probably I've still got friends who are around there, and I'm there about once a year, and then and my folks are now have moved outside of Baltimore, so you know I'm down there once, twice a year.
Do you mind if I ask what high school it was?
Oh yeah, Springbrook.
Oh nice. What, didn't someone else well known come from Springbrook, or am I thinking of a different? Was it Goldie Hawn or Ben Stein or someone came out of here?
Ben Stein, I think, and Goldie Hawn went to Blair.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's not as good a school, really, at the time.
Okay, but you didn't know them back then, did you?
No, I didn't even know I was going to end up doing what I was doing.
Do you still pinch yourself every now and then? Do you know, the little boy from Silver Spring, now when you're on stage, do you pinch yourself when you're, you know, performing comedy?
I'm still stunned by the fact of what's gone on, yeah. You know, that my face is, you know, that I've played the Warner Theater and more than a number of times, that I've done an HBO special out of there, that, it's still like somebody's got to be kidding me. I thought I'd end up teaching theater. That's what I thought I'd do.
How did that happen? If you look back over your life, if there was one big major moment where your trajectory changed?
The trajectory was that I was going to write plays, and I did this stand-up thing on the side for fun, you know, to just kind of get my writing, heard, because you wait around for them to do a play of yours. It takes, you know, years sometimes. So I just kind of started doing it on the side, and then that's where the end, you know, people went, oh, they seem to like that more than they like the playwriting. So I ended up following that path. and the real change came when I just made the decision that, I started going on the road and found that I liked it, and that they paid you. That made a big difference, because, I didn't really switch over till I was 40.
Right.
So it was really, I was about as broke as you could be.
Yeah. Is that rare? I mean, I do feel like a lot of people go into stand-up, in their 20s or something. I mean, do talk about that, like making that change, you know, at 40.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is kind of rare. I think Rodney Dangerfield, it started later also, but I had been doing it on and off, and then once I focused on it, and I just kind of, it was kind of like I was at a time when it was, a good time to really, you know, there was still a good time to go on the road.
Right. Where are you based out of now? Where are we calling from right now?
New York. I can't do Los Angeles. It makes me insane.
They are two different types of people. Why do you think you can fit in the New York crowd a little better?
Well, I mean, it's just a real city. It's got, you know, and you can walk around, and it's got a center to it. You know, it's a city. Los Angeles is a series of suburbs strung around roads. I mean, it's a completely different place.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a driving town.
It's a driving town, and to be honest, you know, part of the thing was just having come from Maryland, you know, and once they built the Beltway, I got, I was, you know, I was never, I like, it was enough with the driving.
Yeah, it's very similar. I think I caught one of your shows, or I don't know if it was a TV special or something, where you were in Atlanta and you came out and said, "Well, nice to see you got the traffic worked out." So, but it made me think of DC as well. I mean, the traffic here is brutal.
The amazing thing is that moment, because I have a tour bus. That moment when you come into Virginia now and out of DC on I think it's 95
or 66, one of them. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's, 95, 60, where they all becomes, it's like a spaghetti loop, and it's, you know, it's more traffic than I ever imagined being there.
So you like the New York model of being able to walk out of your apartment, walk through, you know, whatever, Greenwich Village or whatever, and get on the subway.
I mean, you can walk a couple of miles, and you're at the, you know, from one end to the other. It's not now in this frostbitten tundra it's become, but generally, you know, most of the time you can get out and you can walk and see things. I never really enjoyed driving. I was a lousy driver. I even talk about it in my act now. I was terrible.
Yeah, let's get into your act a little bit. So when you come to, you know, you're coming to the Warner Theater here, I know you said you've played it several times before, but if our listeners have seen you there before, you know, sell it to them to come back again. You know, what incentive is there? How's the show different this time around as opposed to previous?
Well, time? I mean, you know, I don't have to do it all on my own, which is great. And I have, I'm accompanied by, or actually, and I'm kind of in the presence of two tremendous comedians that, you know, the word icon, legend, it just is, you kind of hate those words because it means they've, to me, it's, those words don't really encompass. These are, you know, Tom Smothers and Dick Gregory, who were, two of the most kind of, you know, outspoken comics of their time, and they're still, and still are funny.
Right.
I mean, because to call them an icon of legend means, well, they came and then they did it. I think, you know, it's the fact is these two guys are still. I worked with Dick Gregory and Tom Smothers. We did this benefit in Arizona where the first monument to the Bill of Rights was really built. Mm-hmm. And we raised the money there. And the two of them were stunning. And then there's four other comedians working. And it's Dick Gregory, Tom Smothers, Cristela Alonso, Ahmed Ahmed, John Fugelsang, Chris Bliss, and all of them are terrific.
Do you remember when you first encountered Tom Smothers, Smothers Brothers?
Oh, yeah. First, when they were, him and his brother would show up on TV just doing, you know, their 5 to 7 minutes on either one of the late shows or, you know, Ed Sullivan to date myself.
Really no such thing.
But they would, you know, they would show up and do their act, and it was the smart brother and the dumb brother, and kind of like a Burns and Allen kind of a thing to really date myself. And then but actually, you know, people should, you know, I mean, I always think it's not a matter of people are, because of the 12 billion videos now that people can watch of cats, people lose sight of the fact that there's this whole collection of videos out there of some of the most brilliant comedy ever done. And then they morphed into that, the Smothers Brothers show, which was extraordinary at the time.
No.
It was outspoken. It was dangerous. It was edgy. It was everything that Saturday Night Live claims to be in some cases. But I think they hit it on the mark. It was called Right Place, Right Time, and they spoke to the moment.
Absolutely, and I love your point. I have actually echoed this a ton to some, you know, my peers about just how technology has almost erased time in a way where, you know, yeah, there's all the dumb cat videos you mentioned on YouTube, but you can also pull up a stand-up act from, you know, whenever. Really, you can watch Richard Pryor with a click of a button as fast as you can watch House of Cards or whatever. You know, it's that notion of time is almost erased, and I think that's actually pretty great, especially in comedy.
You now have access to all of it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is extraordinary.
There's even people who, on their way to Warner Theater, could look up your stuff and, you know, get a little primer.
Yeah. they could look up you know, basically, if they want to know what I'm going to be doing, it'll be similar to what I've been doing over the past 25, 30 years. It's, I mean, my act is basically, I mean, the stuff that I'm going to be doing is stuff that is probably, it's about what's going on in Washington now, which I just find to be beyond belief, and the fact that I'll talk about coming from there, and I'm hosting, which is an unusual place to be because I'm, you know, a host is usually someone who's got to be nice, and it's really irritating. It irritates me that I have to be nice for a while. When you know, because you kind of got to make sure that the next guy up gets a fighting chance, but it's...
Yeah, exactly.
You don't want to screw it up for them by being a prick, so...
Exactly.
I look forward... I mean, you know, and I haven't really figured out... I mean, I've got... You know, a couple of hours material that I've been doing on the road for the past couple of years that's new, and it's just a question of what from there I'll be doing. And then they're shooting it as a special, so it'll be on Access TV, and so I have to kind of tailor it somewhat for television, only in the sense of trying to figure out what material do I want to let go of and can't do in the next special.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, you're tailoring it for TV, and you're also tailoring it for Washington. I mean, you have your material you take, you know, nationwide, but in terms of D.C., how do you go about streamlining it to, you know, maybe a couple more D.C. political jokes, or, you know, are there certain...
Well, that's easy, because I was born and raised around there, and so it's, I watched it as a kid, and I watched the changes, and the fact that when I was a kid, the government worked better, and I believe it worked better because a lot of those people were drunks, and apparently alcohol made it easier for them to sit down and talk and get stuff done. Is that true
for stand-up comedy too? Have a couple before you go on?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
I can't. There are people who do.
Right.
I can't, because if I drink before a show, the anger becomes real.
Yes, you're kind of part of your whole act is a lot of the, at least people maybe who've seen maybe Back in Black on the Daily Show or whatever have seen it. It's a lot of that shouting, angry humor. How did you find your voice in that style? Because it works totally.
Well, because it took a long time, but it takes a long time sometimes to figure out what it is that what it is that makes you funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm funny, you know. It turns out, you know, I'm funniest when I'm angry. And whatever that persona is that I throw out there is people find funny. And a lot of the times, you know, they come just to see me get angry. They don't really care what I'm saying. And I don't, you know, I mean, if that's what they want to see, great. I mean, you know, it's kind of a, it's like, in a sense, it's like, you know, a great physical comic. I mean, you know, not that I'm a great angry comic, you know, but that a physical comic, you know, people who come and they may not, you know, what they came to laugh at is their ability to do slapstick, and my ability is to implode.
Exactly. So sometimes do you think that can save a joke? Sometimes maybe it's not, maybe it's even the weakest part of your show, like your least favorite joke.
It's saved many a joke.
Just ratchet.
You know, and in part, I've discovered the fact that when something doesn't work, sometimes I'll yell at the audience because I know it's their fault, and sometimes I'll yell at myself because I know it's my fault.
Is there a little, do you have a preview, not actually any punchlines, but in terms of, you know, which figures of D.C. politicians or anything you might be covering?
Oh, yeah, the President Obama, the ones that, the main ones, President Obama and Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi and John Boehner and the delightful and always very smiley Mitch McConnell, Ted Cruz, maybe we'll touch on Bachman, Rick Perry. You know, who's certainly not, well, they're not Washington, but they're certainly, they're still very funny.
Do you find that today's state of politics is easier to get enraged over for your jokes?
Oh, yeah. I found the one thing in the last 25, 30 years is it gets easier all the time. What's difficult is to try to find the humor within the rage, because they really have gone beyond. They have. I, 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 I just just when I watch them talk to Tim, they say, you know, and this is the way the American people feel. They have no clue as to how the American people feel. They're literally the saddest thing that's occurred in Washington, and they're completely don't even recognize it. They're in a bubble.
Mm-hmm.
They're in a bubble that is like Stephen King's The Dome. They are really in there. They can't apply enough sealant between themselves and their public. I mean, you know, 34% of the American people go out to vote, which is less than voted during World War II when we were at war.
Right.
And they consider, and they're not ashamed of it.
Yeah.
But you hear no one in either party speaking about how shameful that is.
Yeah.
But they rendered the American public, you know, better than any enemy has done. They rendered them immobile.
Right.
They rendered them. They made it. You know, the American public did not want to go out and vote. You know, the people, you know, the less people voted in World War II because they were fighting a war in order so that these people could go vote.
Yeah.
And then these idiots come along and they go, you know what? It's not even worth your time.
Yeah.
And then we elect the same group of schmucks.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's the kind of stuff I'll be doing.
See, he's getting fired up over his morning coffee, just like he's going to be on stage.
I knew eventually we'd reach it.
Well, now you're awake. It's true. With your act, it's almost like we have to laugh to keep from crying with some of that stuff. It's serious.
Because the truth is that it doesn't read like news. It reads like satire.
Right.
It reads like someone is writing a fictional account.
Absolutely.
If you wake up and look at that newspaper as if it's fiction, it's funny.
It's true. Am I reading The Onion or an actual paper right now? It's hard to tell sometimes.
ISIL has 30,000 troops.
Right.
That's how many troops they have. 30,000.
Yeah.
Well, there are 300 million Americans.
Right.
There are a gazillion Chinese. There are a ton of Indians. There's 30,000 troops.
Yeah.
It's not a big group.
Right.
You want to worry about the guys who are going over there and are coming back and are taking time bombs. I get that. But don't tell me that the world can't get together a force that can beat 30,000 troops.
Right.
It's absurd.
Why can't we pull our resources here?
I mean, it is. It's just absurd. You go, what? Because when I read that number, I was like, because it reads like, boy, they're everywhere. Boy, they're coming out of the woodwork. Boy, there's a billion of them. They're just like termites. Well, no, they're 30,000.
Right.
It reads like a joke.
Right, right. Well, and there's your material right there. You don't even have to write it sometimes. It writes itself.
No, you don't have to write it. It's literally as if, as a friend of mine has said, that it's like Kurt Vonnegut is writing it.
Absolutely. Slaughterhouse. Some of our listeners, maybe they've seen you at the Warner Theater before, or maybe they've just caught you, you know, in snippets like Back in Black with The Daily Show. I actually just had the chance to interview Jon Stewart when he was touring with Rosewater, and we didn't know he's going to be leaving at the time, but do you mind saying a few words on Jon Stewart and your interactions with him? I mean, now that he's stepping down, I mean, any final thoughts?
I thought it was incredible to be involved in that run with him, and that I have enjoyed working with him. I've enjoyed watching him work. I mean, he's more talented in the way that, in the same sense that Stephen Colbert is more talented than that show is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that his ability to work that show, that there are other things that he is just as capable of doing, and I think that he'll move on to something else and be just as brilliant at it, which is really, to someone like myself, irritating to watch. But it was a pleasure working with him and spending time with him. I do think it's smart of him to step down at this point, because it's an exhausting, there just comes a point when you're doing that sort of thing that it's It's not that it's not fun anymore. It's just you've run the same track over and over and over again. And it's time to go. You know, I got as much as I could. You know what I think it boils down to? Growth.
Mm, yeah, you want to keep challenging yourself. Yeah.
And he's not. It's not like he's 75. He's a young guy who wants to grow, and he's grown as far as he can. You know, his size 36 pants don't fit anymore.
That's a good analogy. Hey, and you know, if you haven't seen any of Lewis Black's stuff on the Daily Show clips, you guys got to look it up. One of my favorites was when you did the Glenn Beck has Nazi Tourette's. I thought it was just brilliant.
Well, thanks. That's what's the great thing about working on that show too, is you've got these terrific writers that work with you, and you've got a whole group of editors. That editing group is the ones who work behind the scenes are brilliant.
How does that work? So, for instance, you would come on for a little segment. You're writing your material, but also with their team of writers for those segments, or how does that work?
John really. The show, John puts together the show, and they find some topic they want me to go off on, and so they essentially write the first draft of it, because I'm traveling around so much, I'm not available, and they write the first draft, and I come back in, and then I work through the first draft with them, we come up with a second draft, and then we take it to John and go through a third draft, and then we go out, and we basically, or they may even do a fourth draft on their own, where I may throw some stuff out that I've thought of, and then we go there, we run it with the clips and stuff, and then without an audience, we go through it once more. Then we take it into John, and then the whole group, the senior producers and John, then go through it again, and then we're on the air.
Gotcha. Compare that to what you'll be doing here this weekend. Is there a different energy to doing it live? Because, I mean, even The Daily Show was taped. So, I mean,
The nice thing about The Daily Show is it's there is a live audience. So you get a taste of that. The difference is that it's just me, and I'm not a part of The Daily Show. It's just me. So the energy is different in the sense that I can, and also if you're not shooting just for a camera, that I'm in there with 2,000 people.
Right, exactly.
All of a sudden it's a different leap of energy.
Do you usually get good audience reaction in D.C.? How's our funny bone compared to other cities?
It's great. I mean, it really is. It has and it will continue to be. It's a great comedy town, and initially a lot of great people have come out of there, and people who you don't even know of because they went on to become writers and producers in Los Angeles. So that I've kind of kept a bit of in touch with over the years, and I mean the only time that DC sucks as a comedy town is the Congressional Correspondents' Dinner, or the White House, the writers, the guys who cover the White House, that dinner. There's two of them, and I did one of them. And it's you get all those people in the room, and they're a pain in the neck. They're not, you want a diverse group of people in the room. It's like if you do that with any group, as soon as you put all the people in one company doing corporate events, all the people in one company are in the same room. They're all Catholics in the same room, all Jews in the same room. It just doesn't work as well.
Well, it's almost like that bubble you're talking about,
Yeah, it is. But boy, do they have sticks placed firmly up there, get the stuff there. Because it's really, I did one, and I've said it, I had to turn, and there's Mitch McConnell sitting literally two seats to my left. I'm on the dais, and he can't crack a smile. He won't crack a smile. And you kind of go, wow. Are you serious?
Yes, too serious.
Yeah, I mean, it's... And then there also is when you do stuff politically in Washington, there's always like, I know what funny is. You don't know what funny is.
Right.
But then again, they don't go out and talk to what the rest of the country thinks is funny.
Right. Well, that's hopefully you can split the difference and you can share what we all think is funny.
I hope so. We're screwed. there'll be no Bill of Rights around the country.
Exactly. Hey, Lewis, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for your time. I know that Chris appreciates it. I appreciate it, and we have just a few hundred seats left to sell, and I'd love to sell it out. So thank you.
Thanks so much for coming on WTOP.
My pleasure. I listened to that station as a kid. It was the big station, and you know, it was kind of the legit station in Washington. You know, way back when, and you know, it wasn't the music station. It was the station where you went and got the actual information and facts. It was WTOP radio and television. It was huge.
Yeah.
At the time, it was huge, and it was at the time when, you know, when we had less sources of information and actually more accurate information.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, we help cut through some of the BS like you're trying to do. So.
Well, tell them they better. Or I'll kick their ass.
All right. Hey, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you. Take care. Have a good day.